Foster Myers Felchery Udo Shachler, Mayrum Marilyn Crellin. I'm Marilyn Crellin, and I'd like to welcome you to this edition of Shachler. In Shachler this week, on Shachler and Shachton Shaw, Fauje Draenen, A Suggestion of Wrens, the title of the new collection of poems just published by Annie Kizik. As Teichau Hulujid, he's behind you.
Oh, no, he isn't.
Oh, yes, he is. The World of Pantomime with Peel Pantaloons. As we've heard in the past two editions of Shachler, we're approaching two important deadlines. The first of those is Monday the 1st of December. That's the date by which you need to send in up to three poems of no more than 25 lines, and 10 of the entries will be chosen to make up the Isle of Man Poetry Society Poetry Trail, when the chosen poems will be on display in various public places in Douglas City Centre, from St Valentine's Day to the 14th of March. There's an entry fee of £4 per poem, and the final day for putting them in is this coming Monday, the 1st of December. The second important deadline is 12 noon on Tuesday, the 2nd of December, and that's the cut-off for nominations for the Rye Bleaner Venannan, the RBV, Manannan's Choice of the Year, the island's highest cultural honour. Nominations can be made in respect of individuals or of groups of people who've made an outstanding contribution to the cultural life of the island, and that's culture in its widest application. It might be a highly significant particular contribution that's been made, or it might be as recognition of outstanding cumulative achievements over a number of years. Nominations go before a panel of representatives from a number of the island's cultural organisations, and the announcement of the RBV comes in January. All are very welcome to submit nominations, but those nominations must be received by Culture Vannan by midday on this coming Tuesday, the 2nd of December. Ta enam luch tai Wordsworth, Maya Enna, Kindak Rishova, William Wordsworth. De Jari Vasoch de Hyangl Rish Manon, Trude Ben William Wordsworth, Mary Hutchinson. Van Ange Jane Brerach and Ek Mary Hutchinson, Henry, Ave Erech Heden, Ach Henke de Vena Howe, Ek Chowna Howe, on Stoolish. As Van Hugh Ser Egger, Joanna, Frail Ty Erehon. Drail Shua William Wordsworth, Dorothy, Gilane McKeown, Kershilia e Henry as Joanna Hutchinson, uns Hockey Jeg Hocht as Feed, Gauss Jack Keat de Kirjan Joanna, and Aramac Robert as Dorothy Brown, as in Luck Tae Gok, Gorks Jack Devlin the Sanma, and Badra Hit Thomas Edward Brown. Borlach William as Dorothy Wordsworth, Chinu Koshiacht and Yaura Rachelia, Mernan Gown, Screw Dorothy, unsa Gilane, as Laura Acacius William, McKeown Nevada Vagan. Tana Gilane and J. Dorothy, Kirs Sanish, Denodach and Denard, Huach Leorish William Wordsworth, McKeown Lussen Nenui, Goyles Jack Smunyachton, as Kuntach and Eksh, as de Raudair Linear Ega Hood Slew, Cruitek Ben William, Mary. The poet William Wordsworth visited the Isle of Man only briefly in 1833, although his wife's brother and sister were living on the South Quay in Douglas for a number of years. Wordsworth said that poetry is the spontaneous overflow of powerful feelings. It takes its origin from emotion recollected in tranquility. The fifth Manx bard is Annie Kizik, RBV, and she's just launched her second collection of her poetry in a book that she's called A Suggestion of Wrens. Sandwiched in this recording, we'll hear Annie's introduction from the launch of her book, but first she describes her own way of working towards producing her poetry.
I go outside usually and walk, and either notice something that triggers a thought, or I just walk, but when I get back, suddenly all sorts of things, nothing to do with the walk, turn up. So, that's sort of my usual way in. Sometimes I have a weird dream and wake up and write it down before I've forgotten it and use part of that. Not so often, but you sometimes get quite strange effects from that. Sometimes I write in response to sort of artworks or things I've seen. Not always done in a state of tranquility, but you know, ideally that's ideally it would all come in a rush and you get it all done in one go, calmly. It doesn't always work like that, but if it's going to happen, it'll happen.
But there must come a time, though, when you've had a thought and think that could be the foundation of something, but then there must be a lot of graft goes into how you shape it thereafter.
Yes, but I don't consciously set out to shape a thing in any particular form. I mean, I like using rhyme and rhythm particularly in some cases, but I wouldn't consciously set out to think, I'm going to do this structure or that structure. I think after a few lines, if something's going, it's creating its own form as you go through, and it's almost a sort of subconscious thing that happens then. But the eventual form, you are working and reworking what you've done then, or not, or just abandoning it because you can't think of a good ending. That's the worst. If you're doing really well and think, oh, this is going really well, and you cannot get an ending, the sort of inspiration runs out. And I've had things sitting there for 3 or 4 years, and then I'll suddenly wake up and know what the last line should be. But that's it's a bit of a pain when that happens. I'd rather it happened in one go, but it comes as it comes.
Your new collection of poems, then, is there any particular theme that you feel runs through it?
I didn't think there was when I put them together, other than there's a general Manxy feel, but not throughout, because I am Manx and this is a place I know and I'm most interested in, I suppose. But wouldn't say the poems are about the Isle of Man as such. They've always got to have something else going on in the background, I think, to work, a hint of another idea or something to think about, as well as sort of observations of things. I did notice, having got all the poems that I've selected together, there's an awful lot of disappearing people and places and then they'll reappear again in different forms sometimes. Quite strange things seem to happen in quite a number of the poems. I must have just that kind of imagination where it runs to those sorts of things. So, yeah, people disappearing, people reappearing. We've got one poem where somebody reappears as a horse, and that was again taken from something I heard. There's another one when I'm sort of imagining my own mother reappears as a wren, my shy wren mother, it's called, and I quite like those images. So yeah, there's lots of strange things as well as some not so strange things. Thank you all for coming tonight. My sister and brother-in-law are busy there sorting books. Well, I'm very glad to say that the days of sorting and piling these bloomin' books, when they were not in book form, are finally over after about 5 or 6 months of, well, many, many poems. And I sort of rooted around and got all these things on pieces of A4 paper. And there were, well, hundreds of them. Oh, goodness, you can't include all those. So what do you do? Well, the method I did 3 years ago, which sort of worked then, was to spread every piece of A4 paper on the floor at the back with the poem up. And then, obviously, my knees have not as good as they were 3 years ago. I couldn't see them at the distance. And I couldn't, if I bent down, I couldn't get up again. And then to cap it all, the cats would come and sit on different poems. And this method is not going to work. So, what do you do? Well, I call on the tried and tested assistants, who are my sister Jenny in the corner, who also did the cover illustrations, and my friend Sandra Cayley, and I said, you can help me sort out which poem should go in here. I had an idea of the ones I liked, but they weren't always the ones they liked. Some had been published already, but they weren't necessarily liked by Jenny and Sandra, so I went with Jenny and Sandra. I trust them greatly. So anyway, little by little, I reduced this pile to something okay, and then you sit them next to each other, opposite each other, and you think, ooh, that poem doesn't go with that poem. It takes ages, stress. Anyway, done now, so I'm very, very glad. The book itself, there's no particular order to it. I think in the one I did 3 years ago, I had the back of my mind, it was sort of seasonal, with the more chilly poems in one area and the autumny ones in another area, really. No, the poems are all different kinds, different moods, different styles. Stories are there because I like listening to stories and telling them. I did wonder about including some of the very long narrative ones because they take up a lot of pages and they're not everybody's cup of tea, and they're probably not what you might call literature, in inverted commas, but I've put some in anyway because I like them and they're me. There are personal poems, which I hope will strike a chord with other people too. Obviously, poems about the island, but not just about the island. Poems in Manx, because there need to be poems in Manx. And that's end of the story as far as I'm concerned. Slightly odd and uncanny poems, because I've got quite a slightly odd and uncanny imagination, and people do keep telling me really weird things, they really do. There are lots of appearances and disappearances in these poems. In fact, that's probably the strongest theme there is overall, though I didn't realise that till I put them all together and thought, oh, what's going on here? And there are poems from real life that did make me sad to write, and I felt I needed to write them, and others which I hope are uplifting, and sometimes in the same poem. And throughout the book, I'm aware of the presence of my late mum and dad, and their voices, and the voices of others who I've sort of borrowed from far back in history, so I might have done them a disservice not being around to actually check up, but you know, hey ho, that's how it goes. Why wrens? Well, Jenny said to me, do you know, for someone who says you don't care much for birds, there's quite a lot of them in this book. And indeed, there is, and indeed in the title. Wrens themselves do fascinate me because they're so small and numerous. Hello. And you've got, just grab a seat. Yeah, they've got all those little eyes looking at you from behind the ivy. I'm so aware of it walking down where we live. Wrens, if you don't see them, you hear them, but they certainly watch you. And that's quite sobering, reminding you you're only a small part of this natural world, quite a big part in a way from their point of view, but you know, in the big scheme of things, you're small. Wrens, of course, play a big role in the folklore of the Isle of Man, and indeed many other places, as you know. So in the end, I thought, why not wrens? So that's what the title's about.
You mentioned in this collection that you've actually not included too many of your longer poems. So what's the future for those? Where are we going to be able to get hold of the longer poems that you've written, the narratives? After all, where would we have been if T. Brown had not bothered to record his long ones?
He lived in an era when long poems were cool. Nowadays, past 30 lines, you've had it. I have been thinking about that, and I suppose ultimately something like a smaller pamphlet or something like that, where you could do fewer but longer, particularly ones that are trying to tell a story as such. And there are poems when I want to tell the whole story, and other poems where you just want to hint at things. There's been a fair amount of recording of me on Culture Van and reciting some of those. Some take 5 or 6 minutes, so you can't. But in terms of, you know, gobbling up the pages, they really do. So I've included 2, I think, longer poems like that in this collection, and another one fairly long. But it is an issue. But I suppose the thing is just to get out and about and perform them. Yeah.
But in the meantime, we can enjoy the new collection then, A Suggestion of Wrens. Anikas at Gurumai Morin.
Well, shay the fae. Keel. Who would know that under this brilliant length of water, under this mountainy reservoir,
there lies a keel. Once there was a forest and no water. Once I was searching and trees stood thickly. I was young then before the changes came. From far away, the trees were children's triangles, but then I saw shapes, sides, angles, points, all disconnected. Where are the words for the thickness, the greenness, the hard softness on which I walked? Where are the places now, where such twistings, scratchings, pullings send you dipping, diving down? I had thought to be with birds and scuttling forest things, but silence came complete. Like a memory of things that are not trees, some stones rose quietly from the moss. A break in the clustering branches let the mist flow in to dance coquettishly around the ruins. 1 foot, maybe 2 foot high, lay grey stones dipped in green, rising faintly rectangular, with gaps where some had fallen or were taken. Here is, or was, a door, and here the altar. I was a child. The stone was cold, the green intense, and simple shapes I understood as I walked beside the walls, a mere splutter of stone from long ago. I thought, who built this thing on a stretch of northern hill? And did he know a forest would grow up around his stones and hide them in its stretching branches, closed, kept, preserved forever? I know now I was wrong about the forest. It was felled, eternal to a child. It was a mere blink of history when the reckoning came. It was cut down and the hillside left all stubbed and stunted, almost as bare as in the early days before the trees, when a keel was raised. The stones were found and recognised for what they were, measured, mapped. The keel was given a name and then once more baptised in a flood of water, deep and necessary, heavy and complete. And something that was raised to God was lost and found and lost. And one day, when I am dead and the reservoir has dried up, maybe the keel will be found again by a child and glorified for a minute of time before the coming of the last forest or the final flood.
Annie Kizik RBV, the Fifth Manx Bard, and her newly published collection of poetry, A Suggestion of Wrens, available now at £9.99. Tan hood smoodalai, en agen panto, ons tai cloi, na ega hood slu er a chal vish. As to fisoch, er a horse a hoosh for the ad jerkle rish fagen. Tan panto no emsherach, sight de cliachtach, ebil arish, na she skeel, ta maia enne. As dinu is de imidi doliadin, ta cushion chit lesh and sly mai ons a skeel. As ed a taneri carach chit air drock sly, nut ad cachler as chit de ve merish and sly mai. On skinshin skeel, ta ram atchis, goilerain as dance, as comrade all, button as reatus. Domenic tan atchis rehigel uns de acht, ta ruthen on for the perchin tiggle as garachtimun and gown, Domenic begin atchis corpach. Ach ta ruthen eller on, nach vel chit e veg de percha, ach for the persoon erzit tiggelad uns acht an chasle. Ta mren on ta comrat medania, dania ta comrat memren, a sly to comrat ma bastion, howd stampanto crew and sail quirk ega heden erin erden. A pantomime in British theatres started as an unspoken mix of slapstick comedy and dance, involving Harlequin and Columbine, and Columbine's foolish father Pantaloon, and the harlequinade came between acts or at the end of a play, even if the play was a serious one. By the end of the 18th century, it had evolved into something light and spectacular with other characters, with song, music, dance and special effects. From the late 19th century, pantomime evolved into the full focus of the evening's colourful entertainment, with slapstick comedy, puns, music and dance, and lots of audience participation. It's a theatrical tradition that continues to be upheld by the Peel Pantaloons. Liam Reynolds is the director of this year's production of Robin Hood, and busy members of the cast and organising all sorts of elements of the pantomime are Chair of the Committee Lisa Meller and Victoria Reynolds.
You know, here in the Centenary Centre in Peel, in a few days' time, it's going to be a riot of noise and laughter. But that's the peak of it. That's the end result. Where do you actually start in quite a major undertaking?
The whole process really starts with sitting down as a group, with the committee, and looking at the script and breaking the script down, seeing what ideas you can come up with or use, and just slowly putting together a bit of a jigsaw puzzle of ideas, and then you sort of try to see what might work, what doesn't work, what does work, and it just sort of, over a period of time, you sort of build this picture in your head of what it might look like in the end.
Mm. You get the script, but then you have to, I suppose, put the local jokes into it. So how does that process work?
The committees, so you look at all the scripts, and then start to whittle it down based on what casting needs you might have. And then when it comes to all the jokes and stuff, sometimes the script writers will leave spaces for local jokes. Mm-hmm. Other times you look at a joke and you just think that's actually not going to work. So for instance, with this script, it was very much based in England, and being Robert Hood, obviously he's a sheriff of the city of Nottingham. So actually with this one, we've had to make a few changes because obviously you make reference to England in front of a Manx audience and things kind of, you know, you'll get booed very quickly. So yeah, we've had to think about it being Nottingham, but not so much England.
Mm. Right. And what about the songs and the music that goes with it?
Interestingly, with this script, some of the songs were written into the script. Oh, right. So they're familiar songs, but with words tweaked to fit the storyline. And then there'll be, I suppose, traditional songs, maybe a love duet. We'll have a big celebration at the end, a nice big opener at the start. You know, we'd look at, try to make sure we've got a nice balance of current music and some older music. Maybe even throw a show song in there, which we have this year, haven't we? We've got a little song from Oliver, a bit of Umpapa going on. So, yeah, some of it comes from the script. The script does direct to a certain point, but equally it's quite nice to have that flexibility to mix it up a bit and put some different hits in there.
And, of course, what we see on the stage is only part of it, isn't it? There's an awful lot that goes on behind the scenes.
Yes, there is, yeah. There's a lot of stuff that we do as a committee, that the planning side of it, making sure that the advertisement's out there as well, making sure the scenery is ready to go. Our artistic director, she does a lot of the stuff throughout the whole of the year. It's once we finish this one, we're starting next year's already. So we don't actually get a break. It's panto all year round for us, having to find everything that we need beforehand, making sure all the songs are ready for starting of the rehearsals. So September, we have to make sure we're ready to go with the kids. So it is a lot of work.
Mm. Yes, and you mentioned the kids there. There's obviously the chorus and lots of dancing. So who does the choreography?
So it's a mixture between a few of us. So myself, Tor, Kaylee, and then we've got a few of the younger kids, teens, shall I say, Ellie and Amy. They've choreographed a few dances as well, which is nice to have them coming up and doing more stuff with us. But it's very much in-house. We do it all ourselves. We're not dancers, but we know how to put a dance together. And that's what we do, yeah.
So as I say, this is coming up. So what are the performances this year?
Oh, yes. Okay, so we open on the 6th, Saturday the 6th, we've got matinee performance. And then the Sunday the 7th, another matinee performance, which is always nice to get two matinees in at the start. Then we'll have a little break. We'll have a Thursday evening performance, a Friday evening performance. And then on the final Saturday, the 13th, we'll have a matinee and an evening performance. Mm. So there's 6 performances altogether, 2 groups of kids, and they'll get to do 3 shows each.
What about the technical side of it then? Obviously, because you have transformation scenes and special lighting effects and so on. So who takes care of that?
We'll have a technical get-in and then a technical rehearsal. We've got quite a lot this year of sort of transitions between scenes, which is working quite nicely. We've sort of come across some situations where we need to be setting things up on stage, but things are still carrying on. So there's a bit more maybe cloth movement than normal. Cloth's coming up and down during the show, which we wouldn't normally have. We'd have a blackout and then everything would change. But it seems to be quite nice to have this extra transition throughout the story, just to enable things to happen at the back without hopefully anyone noticing.
Oh, well, thank you very much indeed. I'm sure it'll be hugely successful. I mean, the Pantaloons have been going for, what, 34 years now?
Yeah, it must be, yeah. It's still going strong. And it's nice as well because the kids are growing up. You know, some of these kids that were here from when they were as young as 7 and are now maybe heading off to university. And the family atmosphere as well. We've got lots of families as well, which is always nice to see. So, it's just a great bunch of people.
Chair of the committee, Lisa Meller, and Liam and Victoria Reynolds, and the Peel Pantaloons 2025 production of Robin Hood, directed by Liam Reynolds, will be staged at the Peel Centenary Centre from Saturday the 6th of December to Saturday the 13th. So Shankar Lesh and just Jera Shackler, Son and Shackler Shaw. That's it from Shackler this time. So from me, Fowen Marilyn Crellin, Sledden You.